It's a cold day, not many people. Like, where's everybody else? Yeah, again, I told you. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tiravanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya. Ashtotara Shata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, Text 42. Namasamaya Shuddhaya Purushaya Paraya Cha Vasudevaya Sattvaya Tubhyam Bhagavate Namaha. Namasamaya Shuddhaya Purushaya Paraya Cha Vasudevaya Sattvaya Tubhyam Bhagavate Namaha. Namasamaya Shuddhaya purushaya paraya cha vasudevaya satvaya tubhyam bhagavate namaha. Namasamaya shuddhaya purushaya paraya cha vasudevaya satvaya tubhyam bhagavate namaha. Namasamaya shuddhaya purushaya paraya cha vasudevaya satvaya tubhyam bhagavate namaha. Namasamaya shuddhaya purushaya paraya cha vasudevaya satvaya tubhyam bhagavate namaha. Ladies, please. Namasamaya shuddhaya purushaya paraya cha vasudevaya satvaya tubhyam bhagavate namaha. Namasamaya shuddhaya purushaya paraya cha vasudevaya satvaya tubhyam bhagavate namaha. Namaha. We offer our respectful obeisances. Samaya, who is equal to everyone. Shuddhaya, who is never contaminated by sinful activities. Purushaya, unto the Supreme Person. Paraya, transcendental. Cha, also. Vasudevaya, living everywhere. Satvaya, who is in the transcendental position. Tubhyam, unto you. Bhagavate, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namaha, obeisances. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ki jaya. Dear Lord, you have no enemies or friends. Therefore, you are equal to everyone. You cannot be contaminated by sinful activities, and your transcendental form is always beyond the material creation. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead because you remain everywhere within all existence. You are consequently known as Vasudeva. We offer you our respectful obeisances. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Vasudeva because he lives everywhere. The word vas means to live. As stated in Brahma Samhita, eko pesaura chayutum jagadanda kotim. The Lord, through his plenary portion, enters into each and every universe to create the material manifestation. He also enters into each and every heart in all living entities and into each and every atom also. Paramanu chayantarastham. Because the Supreme Lord lives everywhere, he is known as Vasudeva. Although he lives everywhere within the material world, he is not contaminated by the modes of nature. The Lord is therefore described in Ishopanishad as Apapa Vidham. He is never contaminated by the modes of material nature. When the Lord descends on this planet, he acts in many ways. He kills demons and performs acts not sanctioned by the Vedic principles. Excuse me. That is, acts considered sinful. Even though he acts in such a way, he is never contaminated by his action. He is therefore described herein as Shuddha, meaning always free from contamination. The Lord is also sama, equal to everyone. In this regard, he states in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 29, Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshyosti na priyah. The Lord has no one as his friend or enemy, and he is equal to everyone. The word sattvaya indicates that the form of the Lord is not material. It is sat chit ananda vigraha. Ishvara parama krishna sachidananda vigraha. His body is different from our material bodies. One should not think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a material body like ours. Om Ajnanat Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a prayer of glorification. They're glorifying Krishna and his wonderful qualities as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So specifically, there are some words that Prabhupada explains in the purport. The word samaya, equal to everyone. Shuddhaya, always pure, never contaminated by the modes of material nature or by his activities. Vasudevaya, the all-omnipresent personality. And sattvaya. Sattvaya is described as never contaminated by the modes of nature. Such a person is worshipable. In fact, only such a person is worshipable. And because that is the position of God or Krishna, this is why they are praying to him. If it is a ordinary conditioned person, then these kinds of prayers don't apply. We're not talking of pure devotees, we're talking of random conditioned person. Because in this world, people have the tendency to worship someone. And they idolize and glorify and worship persons of this world, calling them words such as Bhagavan, etc. That is just sentiment. It is not factual. But here, the word Bhagavan is factual. It says, Tubhyam Bhagavate Namaha. It's very factual. It's factual because first is Vasudevaya. He is all-pervading. He enters into every material. Prabhupada is only talking about the material realm right now. He enters into every material universe as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And then he enters into every atom of existence, of matter, and enters into every heart of every living entity. But just that itself, no one can replicate. Just as this body is a fully functioning machine, but cannot function, the heart cannot beat, the brain cannot work, none of the bodily functions, the chemical reactions, the physical processes cannot start without the living entity, the spiritual being. As soon as the spiritual being leaves, this fantastic machinery comes to a complete halt. Although there is something unique, that even with the presence of the soul, sometimes the brain doesn't work. That's a joke. But anyway, it doesn't work. Yet it's the presence of the soul that is supposed to activate everything else. And the absence of which, however intelligent the person might be, however fantastic, strong, good-looking, intelligent, magnanimous, whatever they were in this material world, has no meaning once the soul leaves the body. Similarly, this material universe is a fantastic machinery. It has so many planets and stars all moving around in perfect orbits, the seasons changing. At a very microscopic level, there are processes happening, and at very astronomical level, there are processes happening, and anywhere in between, there are things that are going on. And all of this happens because of the presence of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He is the soul within this body, gigantic universal body. And at every atomic level, he is present. One is because he is all-pervading. And second is because energy cannot exist separate from the energetic. So he is there in every atom. And he directs every living entity by being present in every living entity's hearts. Because every living entity cannot interact with material energy without the controller of material energy. So he has a very specific function to play. Although he is by himself transcendental, he is within this material world. So he is called Vasudevaya, all existing. Vas means to exist or to be or to live. Vasati tad sthale. Vasati means to stay or to reside. He is Vasudeva because he is residing. He is within every atom and everywhere else in this material world. Now, a person who resides in the material world generally is influenced by the functioning of the material world. And this material world is functioning by the three modes of material nature, as described in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Everything that's going on is fueled by the modes of nature. Every activity in this cosmic body is being fueled by the three modes of nature. And Vasudeva, although is within the material world, he is untouched by the modes of nature. That is why he is very unique. That is the meaning of sattvaya. And there is a tendency, there is an ontological phenomenon called contamination. Contamination, by definition, means something that has moved away or takes one away from the pure state. Pure means without contamination, without mixture of other things. So the material modes contaminate the consciousness of an entity within this material world, means it takes the living entity away from his pure state. That pure state is Sat-Chit Ananda, eternal, fully cognizant, and blissful. But we see that we are not eternal because we are entrapped in a material body. We're not fully cognizant, like we don't know things. We're not aware. We're not aware of what happens on a cosmic level. We're not aware of what happens at a local level. We're not aware of what happens at the bodily level. And we're not even aware of literally anything. We're super space out candidates. Even if we are very intelligent, so-called intelligent in this world, in this birth, let's say, next birth, when we are in the body of an animal or some other being, all that cognizance goes away. So it might be a professor in one life, and the next life maybe a dog or a fly or a cat or a pig, and cannot say, oh, I know all that formula. It doesn't matter. It cannot. So that Sat, Chit and Ananda, the blissful state, is not available. Blissful state is not available because of the artificial existence within a body, with a mind, with false ego, one cannot experience bliss. There's only a hint of bliss. Actually, it is described that even within reflection, one can experience bliss, which was what people are trying, right? If there is a reflection of a mango, there is some experience of bliss of that mango. See the beautiful form of the mango, the beautiful colors of the mango, nice, ripe, golden color. It also looks so succulent, full of juice. So there is some bliss about it. But the real bliss of taste of that mango cannot be possible. So in this material world, there is some sort of bliss. That's why people are busy. But that bliss is not the real one. It's a reflection. It only tells us that there is something called actual bliss. But people are busy settling for the reflection. So the ananda state is elusive. So this is called contamination. The artificial existence is called contamination. And everything in this world is found like that. Gold is found in a contaminated state. Silver is found in a contaminated state. The gems and everything are found in their contaminated state. They all need to go through a process of purification to come back to their pure natural state. You don't just take gold out of a gold mine and hang it around people's ears and neck. It's not available like that. It has to go through purification. It has to be put in fire. The other mixed elements have to be removed. And then it is 24 karat gold. And by the way, in this material world, you cannot wear jewelry made out of 24 karat gold also, because it's too soft. It has to be mixed with other metals, at best to make it 22. They mix copper or some other metals to bring it to 22 carats, so it's firm enough to make jewelry. You cannot use silver in its pure state in this world. You have to mix it with copper. Have you noticed? If you scrub too much of silver cups, you see the copper underneath. It has to be mixed with copper to make it firm enough. So in this world, to do anything, it has to be contaminated. That's the point. It has to be mixed with something other than its original state, just to be able to use it. So consciousness has to have a process by which it becomes pure. The burning away of the contaminants, the removal of things that keep it in its impure state. But the position of Vishnu or Krishna is such, while he is in this material world, there is nothing that contaminates him. Another feature that contaminates the consciousness is activities. And to live in this material world, the human beings have come up with a set of codes of living called morality, ethics, and we live by that. And morality and ethics primarily come from tradition. And generally we know that tradition many years ago was fairly pure, in the sense that it was God-centered. But with time, morality changes. It should not change, but we see that it changes. It changes because civilization moves from God-centeredness to me-centered, me-centered, centered around sense gratification, centered around something other than God. So what happens is, when the center moves, the whole moral system, ethical system needs a readjustment. Or they call it refinement, we consider it to be contamination. It is adjusted for convenience. Morality that is adjusted for convenience is not morality. Yeah, it's just a legal way of sense gratification. Morality is that by which one feels the little pinch to veer away from the middle of the road. So activities contaminate the set of the rules and codes that civilization or humanity creates can contaminate because there is no absolute standard. So we'll say it differently. He has to take the battery out and all. It's a little complicated phone. So Krishna does activities that from a moral perspective, from the modern or any moral perspective, seems immoral or unethical. But here the realization is, he's Shuddhaya. A person, when he does things that are outside the boundaries of morality and ethics, becomes contaminated, Ashuddha. But Krishna always remains Shuddha. Doesn't matter what he is doing. Someone might say, whoa, wait a minute, this is sentimental. Whatever you say, he can do anything. So it's all right that he steals butter. It's all right that he steals the garments of the young gopis. And not only that, he asks them to come out of the water like this. That's all right, huh? It's all right that he dances with all these young girls and women who are mothers and wives of someone else in the dead of night. It is all right that he has 16,108 wives, huh? Is it all right that he tricked Duryodhana? Is it all right that he tricked Jayadratha? Is it all right that he tricked such and such person? Is it all right? How can you say? How can you say that he remained Shuddha when there are so many instances that he has transgressed the boundary of morality? So that question comes because fundamentally we are saying, or whoever is saying, that you're treating Krishna as one of the conditioned persons within this realm. Second, one is also considering that these laws bind Krishna. Both are not true. Because unless one understands his ontological position or actual existence, that he is, while in this material realm, not of this material realm. That's why the end of the purport, one should not think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a material body like ours. When there is a material body, that material body influences our consciousness in a particular way. And for such persons, there needs to be boundaries. Because with boundary, there is civilization. Not in terms of people getting together civilization, but the process of becoming civilized. Prabhupada explains, one is not considered a human being unless he lives by the varna and ashram system. He's not even considered a human being. Because by varna and ashram, one fits into certain boundaries and blocks of behaviors and activities. And if they transgress their varna or transgress their ashram, then they transgress morality and ethics. But Krishna does not belong to any varna. He does not belong to any ashram. So the very basic fundamental needs to be adjusted. And the tricky part is, he looks just like us. So these things, unless they are clear, one will feel or one will come to a conclusion that even Krishna or the Supreme Personality is bound by or is vulnerable to the contamination by the modes of nature. A person who's within this material world can be influenced by the mode of ignorance, can fall asleep, or become violent or harsh or whatever. A person in the mode of passion, influenced by the mode of passion, can become extremely selfish, self-centered. A person in the mode of goodness can think a little about benefiting others, but doesn't know how to do it. Krishna's not like that. It's not like he's overcome by sleep or selfishness. Never. Sattvaya and Shuddhaya. And another unique characteristic is that is Samaya. This quality itself shows that he is not contaminated. To be absolutely neutral is impossible. Because as a conditioned soul, there is always some idea of mine, my friend, my enemy. I like, I don't like. It's favorable to me, not favorable to me. Every conditioned soul makes that judgment. So to be neutral is not possible. But the Supreme Personality declares it, Samoham Sarvabhauteshu. I am equal to every living entity. Now, neutrality does not mean indifference. Neutrality does not mean, oh, I don't care whether you're my devotee or you have inimical tendency towards me. I don't care. That's not neutrality. The specific neutrality that Krishna has is that he is reciprocating according to how they want to interact with Krishna. That is his neutrality. I mean, this is very unique. So he's neutral with the demon who is inimical with him in the sense that he reciprocates like that. He's very loving to the devotee because the devotee is very loving to him. And yet he remains neutral. He doesn't say, I don't like this devotee. I don't like this living entity. So it's described in the first chapter of the seventh canto that when a demon rushes to kill Krishna or fight with Krishna, lovingly Krishna fights with him and lovingly kills him. Now, what does that mean? Because Krishna is only looking at the soul, not the whole package that comes with the modes of nature that says, whoa, I don't like this. Because we have, in this material world, the tendency to operate on dualities. If one state exists, the other state cannot exist. I cannot love someone and kill them. Although we do see some silly things like that in this world, and we call it love, but that's not love, that's heavy. Mode of ignorance. I love someone so much that I will even kill them. There are people like that. Actually, they're not loving that. For example, there are many stories of possessive love. I love such and such person so much that if they do anything that's not okay for me, then I can even kill them. That's not love at all. But that exists in this world. But this is not Krishna. Krishna is lovingly reciprocating with Shishupal or Ravana or whoever. So in one sense, one might say, how do I understand this? Well, it takes one to know one. Therefore, spiritual life is to come to the same platform as Krishna, to be able to understand Krishna. And that is the process. There is a methodology by which one can come to the same platform as Krishna, so we can serve and understand Krishna. If we cannot come to the same platform as Krishna, we cannot serve Krishna. The separation, not in the transcendental way, in the real way, the separation is so much that a person cannot serve God. So Krishna can be served and loved only when we are on the same platform as Krishna. This is called bhakti. Krishna is on the transcendental platform, bhakti is on the transcendental platform, and unless the bhakta is also on the transcendental platform, there cannot be that rasa, that exchange. So the prachetas, they are on the transcendental platform. So they can express this, that you are Shuddhaya. If one is not on the transcendental platform, one cannot understand how Krishna is always transcendental or pure. So there's a story that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would quote, that according to the modes of nature, according to one's situation, one sees certain things in a certain way. His disciples, they had gone to Burma. I think Burma is called Myanmar, I think now. Yeah. And they had opened a little preaching center, and they were making halwa in pure cow ghee. So when you make halwa in pure cow ghee, it has a very particular fragrance to it. Actually, it's a very attractive fragrance. And the neighbors, they were cooking whatever little animal that was fermented in some acid over days, and it was being roasted or fried or something. So there was smell emanating from their kitchen, and the smell of halwa in pure cow ghee was emanating from the devotee's kitchen. And both the residents of this house and the residents of that house, both were suffering. They were suffering, the devotees were suffering because the smell, the was reeking from the dead animals that were fermented, was just too much to bear. And the neighbors were suffering because the smell from halwa and cow ghee was too much to bear. They said, "What is this you're cooking? Oh, this is so smelly, so bad." And the devotee said, "What are you cooking? It is so bad." However, the suffering was not on the same level. These devotees were cooking in ghee, and they couldn't tolerate, you know, the smell of dead animals. And they were in the mode, the neighbors were so much in the mode of ignorance that they could not appreciate the smell of cow ghee. So someone who's in the mode of ignorance cannot appreciate something that's, even in this world, within the mode of goodness, they cannot appreciate it. It's like, why is this person always like that? Why do they have to be like this? This is, why can't they be like one of us, like in ignorance? What's wrong with us? And the person in the mode of goodness would be like, why are all these people like this? Why cannot they be in the mode of goodness? Of course, nobody thinks that they are in mode of ignorance. Right? That's another thing. Everyone thinks, I'm in goodness, others are in ignorance. The very fact that they cannot see how much I'm in goodness, that is their ignorance. Right? But this is how the modes of nature, they trick us. So one who is influenced by the mode of ignorance cannot understand, cannot appreciate. Huh? God is a cowherd boy? Huh, come on, something. Doesn't make any sense. I cannot make sense out of such behavior of Krishna. Why Krishna is like this? Why Krishna is like that? Many years ago, someone argued with me very heavily He said, you know, I can appreciate the Bhagavad Gita and all that because there are all these shlokas and many people recite the shlokas. But I must say one thing. He said, this Bhagavad Gita, it seems like Krishna is so self-centered. The whole Bhagavad Gita, it's about surrender to me, become my devotee. Do this to me. This is how you're going to become happy. Serve me, serve me. What is he talking about? Why is he all about him? Isn't he a little puffed up, arrogant? Seems like that. So I explain that, no, actually in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very humble. He's humble because he's speaking the truth. So any person who speaks the truth is actually humble. When we say to God, I am suffering, please protect me, this is humility because this is factual. When God says, yes, I will protect you, this is also humility because it is factual. So what appears like conceited, really self-centered, arrogant, is actually his sweet humility. We have a problem because it sounds like one of us. It sounds like how a person in this world would speak like, but it won't be factual. Nobody can say, Bhoktaram Yagyatapasam. They might say that. But they can't say, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. They may feel like that. But they cannot say, Suhrudam Sarvabhutanam. They think like that. Sometimes, Suhrudam. And Gyatvamam Shantim. And because others cannot recognize this, they are also Ashanta. So Hiranyakashipu, for example. In one sense, he was Bhoktaram Yagyatapa. He was enjoying all the sacrifices in his kingdom. And for practical purposes, he was Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, right? Jai Jagannath Prabhu explained how he would raise his eyebrow and the rivers would stop and the gems would be delivered to his door from the rivers. All the planets would be scared, the demigods would be scared. But he was not Suhrudam Sarvabhutanam. But more importantly, there was no Shantim in his household because in the entire universe, there was 1 5-year-old that did not accept that. And for that reason, he was so restless. It didn't matter that the rest of the universe was scared. 1 5-year-old did not. He was not scared. And Hiranyakashipu was so restless because of that. So there's no Shanti. They can shout, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. In fact, they say it 3 times because they're desperate for it. They're asking for it. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. It's not working. It's not working because they cannot understand Krishna's transcendental position. One who understands Krishna's position, he is really Shant. Because then there's no competition. As long as one is competing with Krishna, one cannot be peaceful. As soon as you stop the competition, it's peaceful. Ever noticed in life? As long as we are competing with somebody, we are restless. Because we are always busy comparing. The day we agree, I'm not in this competition anymore, the first thing that happens is we become peaceful. So in that verse, Krishna describes, no need to compete. I am the master. I am the proprietor of everything. You chill. I'm also your friend. Gyatvamam Shantim Ritchati. Gyatvamam, once you understand Krishna as his factual position, Shanti, one is peaceful. That position is, here Krishna, Prabhupada saying, his body is different from our material bodies. One should not think that he has a material body like ours. Just understanding that, one can become peaceful. But the challenge is on a practical level, on a day-to-day basis. So we need, tying this back all to the theme of this section, we need association. We need association to keep confirming for us. Confirming for us that Krishna is transcendental, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we have a material body. Rati Prabhu's brother, Govinda Prabhu, is a very good friend of mine. And he used to live in Chicago. And he had a very nice way of saying certain things. So, you know, when friends meet, they say, "What's up?" Or, "What's news? What's the news? What's happening? What's happening?" So for all such questions, he only had an answer. Every time someone would ask him, "So, what's going on? What's the latest?" He would say, "Krishna is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nothing has changed." Like that, he would say. So that position doesn't change. People come and go. The devatas come and go. The manus come and go. The brahmas come and go. But Krishna always remains the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to such a person, they are offering their obeisances again and again. Okay, some thoughts, comments to add, yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, thank you very much. You were mentioning how Krishna will reciprocate according to the way he's approached.
Yes.
Because he has this quality of samaya.
Correct.
What about the devotees? Are we, the devotees do that? Because I can think of some examples that seem to indicate, like Prabhupada, if someone gave him a challenging question, there are some instances I can think of, he would respond in a challenging tone also.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit on, do devotees do that, or is there some other quality that we are going for?
So make sure I understand. If Krishna, the point was Krishna reciprocates according to one's surrender, he says, or however one approaches Krishna, Krishna reciprocates accordingly. So in the life of Srila Prabhupada, someone posed a challenging question, Prabhupada would challenge him back. So that's the principle. There are some cases where someone challenged Prabhupada and Prabhupada didn't take that challenge. In that state, still reciprocating in that spirit. Because for some persons, when you take up a challenge and they get defeated or whatever, it's they move from that position. For some persons, when someone challenges and you don't challenge back, they move from that position because it's too much to deal with, no response. Regardless, it is still ye yatha. Now Krishna says, samoham sarva, so devotees describe like this, that in that verse, the first two lines is when Krishna is speaking as Paramatma. Samoham sarva bhuteshu namedveshu astinapriyaha. This is the Paramatma speaking. And the next two lines is Krishna speaking. Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. However, one who comes to me with love and devotion, I am in them and they are in me. So, he is neutral when the living entity in this material world has to move through things and find his course according to the laws of karma. Krishna doesn't interfere to say, you're in this particular body, I don't like you, you should suffer. You're in that particular body, I like you, you should enjoy. That is the samoham. I don't. I'm neutral and I give everyone what they deserve and what they desire with these two combinations. One who's a devotee, because the devotee's attention is on me, wanting to serve me lovingly, Krishna says, I'm very much involved.
And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has somewhat of a different mood also.
Mm-hmm.
Could you speak a little bit about that also?
Well,
please.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has a different mission. He is not acting as Paramatma. He is acting as a devotee of Krishna. And a devotee of Krishna understands the heart of Krishna, although he's neutral. So he's neutral and he's seeing that this soul, because of his activities, is entrapped in this impure body. And that is his anxiety. That's the description given. This is his anxiety. Oh, please don't suffer like this. But as Paramatma will not say, well, I'm going to stop this. So he appears as Lord Chaitanya to challenge that, to say, don't suffer like this. So he doesn't violate his Paramatma function. At the same time, he's also performing or giving access to his compassion. Krishna is very unique. That is the neutrality of Krishna. If we have to do something, we have to move from this position to that position. I have to move from neutral to partial. But Krishna is that he can remain neutral and partial simultaneously. So he's neutral as Paramatma, but he is freely giving as Lord Chaitanya. So he will never violate his own position as Paramatma. Lest someone would say, whoa, because he said, you're Shuddha Sattvaya, you will never transgress your position. So he never transgresses his position. He's simultaneously neutral and partial or something that seems like he's saying you should not do something like this. Conditioned soul cannot do like that. Not possible. To remain partial, to remain neutral and be that at the same time. It takes to be a very special category of personalities. Yeah. Not the Baddha Jiva cannot do. Siddha Jiva can do. A perfected soul, when empowered by Krishna, can do so. Yeah. So I was thinking of Lord Chaitanya bringing Kala Krishna Das back. You know that pastime? He was traveling with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya's assistant, and somewhere in South India, Kal Krishnadas became distracted by the Bhattaharis, the gypsies, and he went and associated with them. When Lord Chaitanya said, he's not here, he went looking for him. And he told them, why have you taken my associate? So they all came out with their weapons, swords, knives, daggers, and they threw it at Lord Chaitanya, and all those daggers turned around and went back to those persons and hurt them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu held Kal Krishnadas by his hair and brought him back. And he brought him back to Jagannath Puri and let him go. You don't need to be with me anymore. Detached, yet very loving. I mean, there are many such instances. Chota Haridas is still called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's love for Chota Haridas, but it manifested this, wow, what is this? For Patnaik, what is the Patnaik's first name? Do you remember? Gopinath Patnaik? When he was not taking care of the finances properly, Gopinath Patnaik. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also very neutral with Gopinath Patnaik, saying he needs to manage his finances. We should not get involved in all of these things. Correct? And he was he had also messed around with Pratap Rudra's son, teasing him that his neck is something like that. And he was ordered to be killed by this very particular method. I don't know what it's called. There's a platform and a little trap door. It opens up. And the person falls onto a bed of swords and pointed spears, and his body tears apart. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, he has messed around with the finances, so that's something he needs to worry about. Of course, then he was saved, but with compassion, but neutral. There's a whole discussion in the same first chapter of seventh canto. How is it that Shishupal got liberated even after he was so envious of Krishna? That's the whole discussion in that chapter. It's described that even in killing Shishupal, it was a very loving gesture. Whoever was killed by Lord Ramachandra, whoever was killed by Krishna, they all attained their swarupa, or they all were got at least liberation. There's a nice discussion in Ramayana. I'm sorry, I'm going here and there. When Maricha, because Maricha and Subahu had attacked when Vishwamitra was there, and Lord Ramachandra had killed Subahu, and he shot an arrow at Maricha, then Maricha flew 800 miles into the ocean and fell off somewhere in the ocean. So then he went back to report to Ravana, and when Ravana came to know that Lord Ramachandra, Lakshmana and Sita are in the forest, he had this whole plan of kidnapping Sita. So he employed Maricha as the accomplice for the crime. So he told him, I want you to transform yourself into this golden deer and entice Sita Devi somehow, and then you run away. Lord Rama will follow you and I will kidnap Sita. Maricha told him, you're such a fool. Be careful. This is not an ordinary person we're dealing with here. He said, I don't care. I heard that her beauty is very charming. So Maricha said, I'm not sure if I want to help you. So Ravana gave him only two alternatives. He said, either you agree to my plan or I'm going to kill you. So Maricha tells Ravana, well, if I agree to your plan, then Lord Rama will kill me. If I don't agree, then you will kill me. I would rather die in the hands of Lord Rama than in your hands. Because there is benefit. If I die in his hands, I will get something. If I die in your hands, so I'd rather die in the hands of Lord Ramachandra. So the whole section on that seventh canto is, it's okay. Even inimically to thinking about Krishna is okay in that sense, that they get liberation. And then Prabhupada says, but that is not our process. Our process is to think of Krishna favorably. All these persons were thinking of Krishna all the time. Shishupal was thinking of Krishna 24/7. Kamsa was thinking of Krishna 24/7. And Ravana was thinking of Lord Rama 24/7. But unfavorably. But because they were thinking about Krishna, they got liberated. So that's the neutrality and love of Krishna simultaneously there. Okay. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jai.